This podcast is for alcoholics that have a willingness to recover from their alcoholism by being taught and practicing the principles of the 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book and the 12 and 12 of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ilya, and I am an alcoholic. Page XIII, forward to first edition, first paragraph. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. So now we have completed step 10 in learning, and now we're going to move into step 11. We are going to go back to the Big Book, and we're going to read where it leaves off on page 85 at the bottom of the page, and we'll tie 10 and 11 together as far as the three steps are concerned. 10, 11, and 12 are all interwoven, so now we're going to tie 10 into 11. So if you go to the bottom of the page on 85, we'll start with the last paragraph. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. So Bill is admitting that it would be easy to be vague on this matter. It almost as if he would rather skip it himself, but he's not. This is a part of the program where the spiritual is growing inside you, and when you don't work these steps, you're going to lose that spiritual consciousness that you've worked for in steps 4 through 9 and 10. Where it says the proper attitude in that paragraph, I have written next to that God consciousness. So it's not just motivation. What do I achieve when I work the first 10 steps? Well, if we go back to the prior paragraph before that, it says on page 85, in the last full paragraph, if we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. So that's what the proper attitude is. So therefore, we have to remember this is a spiritual program, and once we have God consciousness, or consciousness with your higher power, if you prefer, we need to expand upon it, and that requires more action. So Bill, instead of getting into all this spiritual suggestions that you can also learn about in other books on how to meditate. There's lots of books on meditation. But as far as it relates to this program, he's going to take us back to the 12 steps. So if you look at the next paragraph, we read this in the last podcast, and it's worth reading again because the next paragraph has all 12 steps in it. So let's read it again. page 86, first full paragraph. This is the inventory we take when we retire at night. It's part of the 11th step. All right, so keep that in mind when it says when we retire at night. And I'll continue. We constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? That's step 4. Do we owe an apology? That's step 8 and 9. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? That's step 5. Were we kind and loving toward all? Step 11. What could we have done better? That's 10 and 11. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Step 3. Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Step 12. Of what we could pack into the stream of life. We must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. That's steps 1 and 2. For that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making a review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. That's steps 8 and 9 once again. So we're asking for forgiveness from our higher power when we discover something that we were in our defects. And we also ask what corrective measures we can take to become better. And that is asking your higher power for help. That's not asking your sponsor or another human being at this point. You are now trying to get intuition from your higher power on how to proceed. And your higher power can only forgive you if you've done all 12 steps. Then you will feel the flow of forgiveness running through you. And that's not something that you need anybody's approval for. Your sponsor can't forgive you. Your higher power has to. But backtracking a little bit, why are all 12 steps in that one paragraph? We've read that we're now on step 11. So why is Bill rehashing all 12 steps? Well, remember when I had started this podcast, my intent was to explain on the introduction of this podcast, and the very first one was to how to tie all 12 steps together as one giant step, broken down into 12 parts of understanding. Well, you can't do an 11th step if you don't understand all 12 steps. But the alcoholic needs to learn them in piecemeal. It's too overwhelming to explain how this whole program works in one day. And we come up with our own program and how what each step means when we just simply read it off the wall. So even though the off the wall steps are exact in nature and they are the principles, they can be misconstrued and rationalized into another program if we don't read this literature as far as what Bill intended for us to understand. So now we know 11 is repeating all 12 steps and making sure that we understood the day's events as it relates to the program and your external and internal life. How has your external life affected your internal life and vice versa? There are people that we may have harmed, they're external, but how has our inner life affected us to treat them the way we have? You know, there's a line in here that says, have we treated all of them with loving kindness? Well, when I read that, I'm like, well, all? I have to treat all people with loving kindness? There are people who I don't like at all and quite truthfully could care less about. But if they are in my day and I treat them with dishonesty, anger, fear, revenge, I am not willing to have God remove all my character flaws. Now, I may make a mistake and do it anyway, but if my character flaws are removed, then what comes out automatically? Loving kindness. I'm going to treat everybody, including my enemies, with the same love and kindness that I would want in return from everybody else. I have to go through my inventory and think about the day's events and ask God for help and look at what I could have done better. And every day when I was new, I had to write all this down. So this inventory was 10 and 11 tied together. I had to write them down. I couldn't remember, or I wasn't smart enough to know in my mind who I was resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. So I had to actually take a pen and pad on my bed or before I went to bed and answer each one of these questions on paper. Because I did a fourth step inventory to clean house, I need to continue to clean house every day. And I'm not experienced enough when I'm new to not write it down and look at it. So the program is right there in that paragraph. And every night you should be writing it down. Now, we'll get into that in more detail when we get into 10 again in the 12 and 12, which we read in the last podcast. In step 10, there are specific questions in here. So now I'm showing you how 10 and 11 are tied together, because all 12 steps are in 10, 11, and 12. So it becomes a little bit more advanced when you practice the program in 10, 11, and 12. You're growing and learning and understanding. So that's what we're going to do in this as well. So if you look at page 93 in the 12 and 12 and go to the third full paragraph, he reiterates evening. So when evening comes, perhaps just before going to sleep, many of us draw up a balance sheet for the day. This is a good place to remember that inventory taking is not always done in red ink. It's a poor day indeed when we haven't done something right. As a matter of fact, the waking hours are usually well filled with things that are constructive. Good intentions, good thoughts, and good acts are there for us to see. Even when we have tried hard and failed, we may chalk that up as one of the greatest credits of all. Under these conditions, the pains of failure are converted into assets. Out of them, we receive the stimulation we need to go forward. Someone who knew what he was talking about once remarked that pain was the touchstone of all spiritual progress. How hardly we AAs can agree with him, for we know that the pains of drinking had to become before sobriety and emotional turmoil before serenity. So I talked about those lines towards the end of the paragraph in much greater detail in the last podcast, but he does mention the evening again. And before going to sleep, we do this balance sheet. And you can find this balance sheet on page 86 in the first full paragraph of the big book. And we want to draw it up. So drawing it up means, again, pen and paper. We draw, right, with pen. So this is a good place that we're taking, you know, we're not always looking for the bad. So if you ask yourself, was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? And you were a little less you than you were yesterday, or as a result, you weren't as resentful, selfish, then you probably treated somebody well that you otherwise wouldn't have if you weren't doing a 10th step. So that's a spiritual experience. And when you continue to make amends, if you have hurt anybody, or forgive if they've harmed you, then you can ask your higher power for more corrective measures and forgiveness. And that is now growing your relationship, not with other people, but with a higher power. So that's why it ends with forgiveness and corrective measures from your higher power instead of other people. You have no power to remove these defects. So that's why you're again reminding yourself that you need to literally ask God for help, even though that you've done the inventory. So that's why that paragraph is super important, and how 10 and 11 are interconnected. Okay, so now he's going to talk about what happens when we wake up in the morning. For some reason, he does the retire at night first and the wake up in the morning second. But what's the difference? There it is on the next paragraph. Second full paragraph, page 86. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. So that first line I've underlined as manageability. That is the first step. How am I going to manage my day, externally and internally? See, there's two questions there. We think about, or there's two contemplations. We consider the next 24 hours, and we consider our plans for the day. So my plans for the day may not be, oh, I'm going to go pick up the laundry, I'm going to go to get the kids from school, I'm going to pay the bills. It may, yeah, those are things that we certainly want to consider because we have to have our feet here planted on earth. But he means spiritually. You know, are you going to have a spiritual day or a day of ego-driven mania? That for me is what that means. I'm considering how I'm going to go through this day in God's will instead of my will. So first I have to understand that manageability is the first thing that I have to get a hold of. I can't manage my inner emotions without the help of a higher power. I know that because we learned that. We learned that unmanageability isn't only if I could manage, let's say, my drinking. We already tried that for years. Let's see if I could manage other people, other places, other situations. Then I'll be okay. No, that's not what unmanageability means if you've been listening and reading and learning. It's about your inner nature is unmanageable and your reaction to alcohol, people, places, things, and situations that's unmanageable. So are you going to be in your will or God's will when you contemplate this is what you're asking. So the 24 hours ahead could consist of external but mainly internal ambitions of the day. All right. So before we begin, we'll go back to the paragraph. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. So that's steps 2 and 3. So we are asking God to direct our thinking because when we are in step 3, what are we turning over? We're turning over our thinking, which is our will, all right, and our actions, which is our life. So you're asking God right out of right at the beginning of the day to direct those things and reminding yourself of 2 and 3, and you come to believe when you do that. The more you do this, the more you come to believe. Come to believe is a forward thinking verb. So you're coming to believe more and more that your higher power is a necessary part of your day. Okay, so let's go back, especially that asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. That's steps 4 through 7. So now we're doing an inventory. Very, you know, we've done an inventory, but we haven't needed to because our day's just getting going. But it's a quick inventory about why we're doing 4 through 7. We're getting ahead of it. We're getting ahead of where we're in self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking, or any other character defect that you are having trouble with. And we ask God to remove those right at the beginning of the day, so you don't even have to get into self-pity extremely, or self-seeking starts to wreck your day. You want to ask God for help before your day begins, and get as much power to stay out of your defects before the day starts. Okay, next paragraph, next sentence. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And that's 10. That's step 10. So we're clearing our thinking of wrong motives. We have God consciousness when our thought life is on a higher plane. Our thought life is now in God consciousness. And we're cleared of wrong motives. We're asking God to remove our character flaws. So that's, again, step 10 is steps 4 through 9 in principle. So he's basically making these sentences are demonstrating, again, that the program is in all of the steps. Okay, the steps are not separated. They're tied together. They're just separated for learning purposes. So you are always on all 12 steps if you know this program. You may be thinking about step 3 in a given moment, or 2 or 4, but you are using that step to propel you into the subsequent step. And if you're having trouble with one step, you need to go back to the prior step, where that now hopefully you're seeing why you can't skip steps in this program for it to work. Not because we're, you know, AAers are trying to punish you because I had to do it, so you better do it. No, it's because it doesn't work if you don't tie all 12 steps together. You don't get the results and the promises, and the program doesn't come into full consummation. And where did we learn that? Well, if you go back to there is a solution, right? When we're doing when we're doing step 10 and 11, it includes self-searching. So if you go back to page 25, the first full paragraph, it says there is a solution. Almost none of us liked the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. So this is a process. Working these steps is interlinked as a process. So if you don't do the things you don't like, which eventually you'll start to like because you'll see the benefit in them, and the spiritual awakening you get is not something that you're going to want to give up. So you end up doing it anyway after you've tried it for a while. People usually balk at things that they don't know or haven't tried. And alcoholics are in fear of change, and they don't want to know a program that they haven't run before. And they think it's something it's not, and then they don't want to do it the way it says, and they're going to come up with their own one because they think they're smarter than the book and the people who've been here before. So that's why there's a lot of information in here on rationalization and justifying, especially in the 12 and 12. So we remember, again, we're thinking. I said in the last podcast, there's rooms to turn the think sign upside down. Well, it says right here we need to think. God gave us brains to use. Our thought life and thinking needs to be right side up instead of upside down. And the only way to do that is to have a program on how to think. And this program in the 10th step shows you how to think, so you can get to God consciousness. So that is what we do every morning. So you're doing, you know, technically you're doing step 10 and 11, but 11 for this example, for the purposes of understanding, is all 12 steps. And now you are practicing all 12 steps at night, and you're practicing all 12 steps when you wake up in the morning. And that's how you are now are trying to get to God's will for you. All right, so now we're going to go into the next paragraph. Last paragraph on page 86. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. So he ends the paragraph with, we come to rely upon it. As I said earlier, in my experience, I didn't want to do this at first. None of us liked the soul searching and whatnot, and the removal of our shortcomings. But soon, by doing the 11th and 10th step, I come to rely upon the process. And the process gets me to God consciousness. And when I have God consciousness, I can now make good choices and decisions. Okay, so we're asking God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. And we relax and take it easy. So when I'm God conscious and I ask God for help, what ends up happening is I have peace to make good choices and decisions. I'm not in a state of tension and fear. And when I'm in tension and fear, I'm not relaxed and I'm not taking it easy. All right, I'm not wearing my program like a loose garment, as my sponsor used to say. I'm rigid and nervous. And when I am, I struggle. And I'm trying to find the answers when I'm not asking my higher power for answers. So we may have to ask our higher power during the day for help. See, it says we may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God. We don't tell God, we ask him or her or it for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision, and then let it come to us. And once we've tried this for a while, what used to be a hunch, which is a gut feeling or an occasional inspiration, becomes a working part of the mind. It's not something that just happens once in a while. It happens all day. All right. So when we do that, we improve this conscious contact with our higher power. So the step says that we improve our conscious contact with God. Okay? By improving, first we have to get God consciousness in 10, and then we improve it in 11. So I can't improve that consciousness if I refuse to work 11, or if I change the program to an external God. The program says no external God. It's an inner resource. Whether you fundamentalists out there listening like that or not, it's what the book says. It's not my opinion. So once you have conscious contact with your higher power, you will start to feel its flow through you. And in order to improve that flow, you need to work this program in order. And then you have that conscious contact and you can improve the power within. Now, I'm not saying that other people don't have a higher power within them. Because obviously I'm saying that everybody does. The drop of God is in everybody. So as far as my internal God is concerned, there is an external higher power in others. So yes, you could say there's an external higher power in you. Another higher power of your understanding exists in you. But that's as far as it gets as far as external goes. The long white beard in the clouds, as far as this book is concerned, is childish. And it's a belief system we were taught when we were kids. And there is a punishing God is not what we find. We find that it's a kind and loving God, and that forgives us and doesn't punish us for dogmatic sins that we commit according to the to the text of the Bible or the Quran or the Torah. That's why this is not a external God. And the people who refuse to accept that this external God isn't directing their lives will have a difficult time accepting step 11 and can't improve their conscious contact with a God of that proves to not be without of them. God flows through you. And you'll see that if you read We Agnostics. If you don't believe me, let's look at that before I move on to the next section. Okay, we'll go to page 55, and it's the second full paragraph. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship, or other things, but in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. It is in the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. So that's it right there. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. So these Christian fundamentalists who started practicing this program started to see and admit that only there that this higher power is found, deep down within. And they've had plenty of analyses, right? They studied the child-like books of their youth. They believed because other people told them what to believe. And that was an analysis. And then they did this last analysis and have concluded, based on the evidence after doing the steps, that that's where God is, deep down within. All right? So next, let's talk about the prejudices. Next paragraph. We can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. So consciousness is within, of your belief is within you. And if you believe, as these people who have swept prejudice aside and worked this program have concluded, you are more than free to join them on the broad highway and walk hand in hand with them in the spirit of the universe and understanding that God's within you. And if you want to separate yourself from that and go to a 12 Steps for Jesus program, or 12 Steps for Jews, or 12 Steps for Muslims, or 12 Steps for Buddhism, then go ahead. You're separating yourself from the inner God that this program says your higher power resides. And you will also be prejudiced against people who say that God is within, that have experienced this program, and you'll grow to dislike them. I've had relationships in the beginning of my recovery. I'll give you an example of people who I had a fellowship with who just refused to leave the fact alone that I didn't want to join their Sermon on the Mount meeting, where the book talks about a religious God. And he said that the guy in there said, well, this is the book that they used to use in the Oxford groups, and this is the original spiritual book. And I said, well, that's fine. That was before the steps were the Oxford group. And the program wasn't designed yet. And people were failing in the Oxford group. They were going back out. It didn't work. It was a failed experiment. And so, yes, there was some short-term sobriety and some success in the short term, but people were not staying sober in the long run. And so it didn't work. And so, yes, some of the spiritual, I said there's no doubt that there's spiritual principles in that book. But at the end of the day, the Emmett Fox books talks about an external God, and you have to bow to an external God. It's not within you. You're just a biological entity, and you have no God in you, and you have to go through a chain of command to get to it. And this book is saying there's no chain of command to God. All right? It's saying that it's already in you and you're simply blocked from it. And so if that is something that other people don't accept, then they are automatically going to be prejudiced against you. Now for me, instead of being angry that they've cast me aside, I say, look, I'm not following the herd. That herd is leading me off a cliff because it doesn't work. The programs don't work. So I'm not going to follow a program that doesn't work. And if that offends them, then that's fine. I've lost, friends in the beginning of my recovery that don't like me because of that. They think I'm teaching the false program, and then I'll read what it says in this book, and they'll just shake their head in disagreement, as if it's not even like holding their hands to the ears and going la 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 like a little kid. And so, I don't really, have time for that in my recovery, but at the same time, I have to tolerate them. But I don't have to go to their meetings that teach an alternative program to this one. I'm not in church, and AA is not church. So, yes, it's in church basements. And I'm very grateful that churches allow us to meet in their basements and work AA. Christian faith has been a friend of AA. And I'm not saying that I don't have gratitude for that. What I am saying is that it's not a Christian program. It's not a Muslim program. It's not a Jewish program. And these are all reiterated in those paragraphs I read. And it's also, I mean, this isn't just me saying this. It's the book saying it. And that's what's most important. So if you also go to page 130, it talks about it again. And I've read this in other podcasts. First full paragraph. Those of us who have spent time in the world of spiritual make-believe have eventually seen the childishness of it. This dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose, accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. We have come to believe He would like us to keep our heads in the clouds with Him, but that our feet ought to be firmly planted on earth. That is where our fellow travelers are, and that is where our work must be done. These are the realities for us. We have found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. So it starts out talking about the childishness, you know, that these are beliefs we learned as a child, okay? He didn't say religious make-believe, but, you know, religion has a claim on spirituality and puts it into a box, and that's not so. You know, well, let's not forget that the Torah was written 5,000 years ago, which is the Old Testament. And before that, humans have been spiritual for 195,000 years prior to that text being written. So you can't tell me that there's been no spirituality up until 5,000 years ago. People have had, you know, look at the caveman drawings on the wall, art, music. These are spiritual practices. Love, patience, tolerance, kindness towards other people. These are spiritual practices. And those forms of humanity that didn't practice spiritual principles actually didn't survive. So, you know, the human being is a spiritual being, just like an animal is a spiritual being. But we've been given the ability to write music and do art. Okay, and that makes us a little bit separate than the animals. And that's a form of spirituality that's unique to us. And so that's just one example. So an experience religiously is not this program. It's a spiritual experience that's within, not of an external God. And Sermon on the Mount doesn't teach that. Okay, so you're practicing a different program when you're doing that program. Just be aware of that. I'm not saying that you can't try it. Go ahead, try it. There's no problem with trying it. I'm not going to stop you. I can't stop you. But I'm just giving you my experience. I've never seen it work. So now, you know, if you want even more further clarification that this is not a Christian program, even though Christians were the discoverers, or Bill Wilson was a discoverer of this program, because he discovered these steps, we're going to turn to a sentence in here that says it's not, literally. So if you go to page 93, towards the bottom of the page, the last sentence, the last four words, it says, "We represent no particular faith or denomination. We are dealing only with general principles common to most denominations." So right there, he's claiming that this is not a religious program. Otherwise, a particular faith would be Christianity. A particular domination could be Jehovah's Witness. I mean, there's lots of things that you can think of. But a lot of these religions, if not all of them, I should say, at least the four main religions, all have spiritual principles in nature. We are dealing with general principles. Spiritual principles common in most of these denominations. So that's all we're dealing with here. So no one's asking also for you to give up your religion. He says that you can go back to the religion of your faith and bring these principles with you. And remember, who is this book written for? Is it written for Christians? Is it written for mankind? No, it's written for a very specific group of people with a very specific condition. And that condition is called chronic alcoholism. So I'm not even sitting here saying that Christianity is incorrect, because I'm not claiming that at all. I'm saying that this program is designed for one particular disease, and not even a hard drinker, but a chronic drinker. And this disease is the solution. This book is the solution for that disease. And that's all I'm saying. So I'm not getting on here and explaining that religion is wrong, or you should believe in something else. All I'm saying is that if you work this program and you're a chronic alcoholic, you'll come to that conclusion yourself, just like the other 100 Christians did when they first started, and millions that followed. And there are people who refuse to believe that, who claim to be in AA. They are in AA, and they claim to work the program. That's fine. They're allowed to be here. They have a desire to stop drinking. That's the only requirement for membership as far as the third tradition is concerned. However, if they're not working all 12 steps, they're still in their ego, and they're still prejudiced, because they don't like people who aren't in their faith, or who they don't believe are actually in the solution because they don't believe in what they believe. That's ego. That is ego. And who knows how long their serenity will really last. I know that there are old-timers who end up miserable thinking like that in the end. And people who have gone back to drinking, who have taught and spoke a big game on this being a religious program and it not working for them or their sponsees. So if that's a risk you want to take, then take it. But I'm not sitting here telling you what to do. I'm just teaching again what the book says. And so I just want to make that clear to everybody listening out there that I'm not a diehard atheist, and nor am I a diehard religious fundamentalist. If anything, the easiest person that has the easiest time with this program is an agnostic who has no proof of the existence or non-existence of God. So they're more open-minded already going into this. And they try the program and come to the same conclusions. Even an atheist comes to the same conclusions once they try this. And honestly, so does a fundamental religious person. Because if religion worked in and of itself, why are there rabbis, why are there priests, why are there ministers in AA? They're supposedly a direct chain of command to God, even more closer to God than you. And they're in AA. So let's think of the facts before we close our minds here and not try something we don't understand. And I'll read contempt prior to investigation is in the appendices. We read that in step two. And there is a solution. Okay, spiritual experience. Go to the second appendices on page 568. Bottom of the page, there is a principle which is bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And principle, that principle is contempt prior to investigation. So if you want to stay ignorant, then stay ignorant. Ignorant is not bliss. There's no bliss in ignorance and not understanding and practicing this program. In fact, you will be in turmoil emotionally and misery. And so that's not bliss. And the principle of prejudice is going to harm you more than it is going to harm the person who actually works this program precisely, as the foreword says. And they'll forgive your derelictions, and you'll be angry and furious in what they believe. And that will keep you in turmoil. Because I know a lot of religious preachers in AA who are in turmoil and who actually have taught many AA meetings and ended up committing suicide when getting involved in criminal activity years down the road. So there you are. All right, so let's move back. And I did go off track there because it's important to keep the book on track with the listener. Because step 11 can start creating belief systems that are ingrained in us, and we need to try to be open-minded. So I don't mean to be Preachy, I just mean to give you a little bit of tough love and understanding, and prove where it says that in the book. And that's all I can do, is teach this program, and that's it. That's all I'm here for. Whether you accept it or not is entirely up to you. So now we're going to go to page 87 again and read the next paragraph, first full paragraph. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. So what I have written in the margin of that paragraph is, "Thy will, not mine, be done." He's basically explaining that we're praying for knowledge of God's will, the power to carry that out. The step does say that we are praying for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. That's the prayer part of this program. And we're not praying for our own selfish ends. We're not praying to win the lottery. We're not praying get a job. We're not praying to get the girl back that we once lost and manipulate the world to our liking. That is not prayer. The prayer is very specific. We pray only, well, there's that word only again, for knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. So when we pray, we're basically saying, "Thy will, not mine, be done." We ask for specific things to achieve that, such as the elimination or freedom from our self-will. And we don't make requests to ourself. Now, he does leave a clause in here that if others will be helped, then yes, we can pray for ourselves. But we're very careful that means that, if somebody else is in trouble and we need something from God in order to help them, then yes, you can say something in that regard in your prayer. But you need to be careful that you're not praying for your own selfish ends, and you need to be a little bit more developed in the program before you know the difference between what's selfish and what's not. So it may take some practice and mistakes. In fact, it will. So we're asking God throughout the day. You know, we're not eliminating God out of our lives in the middle of the day. We do the 10th and 11th step in the morning, and we do it again at night. So that doesn't mean that you just do the step and then go out and live in your will all day long. What it's saying is that God is with you all day. So you're asking God to be with you all day, to help you accept all conditions as they may arise, and what your next step should be in any given situation when problems crop up. And that's why you always need to have God with you. You should always be thinking, am I in your will, God? Am I doing what I can in this moment to be in your will? And if that is always top of mind, then you will always have the power to restrain yourself and analyze what's wrong if you are disturbed and ask God to remove it. You are not to just read a meditation in the morning. It's not saying that read a meditation and then go out and be a backbreaker and a power-mad egomaniac and then come home and then ask for forgiveness. That is not trying to be in God's will. That's just basically asking God to get you out of trouble when you need help. Not enough. So that is what that means in that paragraph. Next paragraph. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or our friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers, which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. So, back to everything I said before, I also said that there are spiritual principles in all the denominations. Soon, when you get good at this program, you'll be able to separate out the dogma and the spirituality from your own religious texts, if you're a religious person. And you will see the difference between what society wants you to believe from a dogmatic perspective and what spirituality is as far as God's truth, not man's truth. And so what you have here is Bill suggesting that you use those resources to help you separate the spiritual from the dogma. And that is why we are okay with this book is okay and perfectly, and whether it matters whether I'm okay with it or not is not the point, but I'm not trying to persuade you to abandon any religious faith you have. What I'm saying is that now if you work this program, you will be able to see that the suggestions in your book also have spiritual principles in nature. Now, if you want to believe that you need to stone your wife to death because she committed adultery, because that's in your literature, then you're believing in the dogma. Okay? That is something that was created by fundamentalists who wanted to control their populations and behave in certain ways to their will and liking. But if you don't believe me, then go ahead and stone your wife to death for committing adultery and see where it gets you. Practice these principles that you find in your religious texts, and you'll see that only love and kindness and patience and tolerance, not vengeance, will come out of you. Okay? So feel free to be part of your religious faith, and it says that in this book as well. Next we'll read the next paragraph on 87, the last paragraph at the bottom of the page. As we go through the day, we pause. When agitated or doubtful, and ask for the right thought or action, we constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. So that's 10 and 11 again. So, and you're in the middle of the day. You still need God with you, as I had said in the other paragraph. We want God with us all the time. And he's saying that we say, "Thy will be done," several times each day. So we're going to be in situations where we're agitated or doubtful. I love those words because that's exactly what happens to me. I'm in fear when I'm doubtful, and I'm agitated when I'm frustrated. And those are simple words that I can use to know that I'm now disturbed. And then I pause. We read about self-restraint in step 10. That's very important to be able to pause first and then analyze what's wrong and then ask God to remove the character defect. So that means that we need help when we ask God to remove the defect, and we ask him again for a thought or an action. Remember, we ask God in step 3 to put in what are we putting in God's care in 3? What decision did we make? We asked for our will and our life, which we learned later is what? Our thinking and our actions. So now we're asking God, what should I think and what should I act like in this situation? Help me. And then we constantly remind ourselves that we're not going to run the show, so we're not trying to jam square pegs into round holes and change conditions that we can't change. And that's the first half of the Serenity Prayer. Now, if you can change things, you can, which is yourself most of the time, then you'll have the wisdom to know the difference. Because why? Because you're practicing the steps, you're practicing the principles, and that gives you the wisdom to know the difference, because God gives you the wisdom to know the difference when you're practicing these steps. So you're humbly asking yourself for God's will to be done, and then you're in much less danger of making it worse by getting excited, fearful, angry, or worrying, or getting into self-pity, or making ultimately foolish choices and decisions, which can lead to more harm. Okay, so you become more efficient. You're not as tired. You're not exhausted all day long trying to shove square pegs into round holes and having the show go off your way. It's amazing how much more energy I have when I just let things flow, when the flow of life just happens and I accept everything that comes along. Again, I'm not a doormat. I'm just saying I can't change things I can't change. And I can change things that I can. Doesn't mean that I can change you. If I still believe I can change another human being, I'm still being dishonest. So you need to go back to steps 4 through 5 and understand that you can't change other people. And there's also a letting go sheet that I uploaded to the Dropbox that explains things we can't change. I highly recommend you look at that. It's in the 6th and 7th category in the Dropbox drive. It's called Letting Go. But nonetheless, these are emotions: excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity. These are emotions, warped emotions, and they're not balanced, and we don't have emotional balance. So once we have emotional balance, we don't tire easily. We don't burn up energy foolishly that trying to do things we can't change, like swimming up current, swimming upstream is exhausting, if you want to use the analogy of trying to swim up river, and trying to arrange life to suit yourself. So he finishes by saying it works, it really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. Okay? So he's saying that we're not disciplined people. Alcoholics can't be told how to live, what to do. We can't even manage our own lives. These emotions are unmanageable. And we ruin opportunities for ourselves, not only externally, but to have a contented, useful life within. And that's not manageable. So the only power greater than ourselves that can manage of us is the God of our understanding, which, if practicing these steps, we realize is within. It for you may be at first an external God, but if you practice these steps, we've read that the last analysis, it's within you that it's found. So if you don't believe me, I challenge you to work the steps and see for yourself. The steps are precisely described in this book, and I'm doing what I can to help you practice them. And I've even uploaded handouts on the Dropbox so you don't even have to create your own spreadsheets to do a fourth step. So if you don't believe me, give it a try and see what happens afterward. I'd love to hear from you if you're one of those people after you've worked the program. So, yes, my higher power directs me, my life, and disciplines me when I don't work the program. I experience pain, and that pain leads me right back to these steps because I don't want to be in suffering. You know, pain is required, suffering is not, if that helps you. So now we're going to read step 11 in the 12 and 12 in the next podcast. Bill has more things to say about it, and I think that I can bring some more color into how he tries to keep us open-minded about meditation and prayer, because there's lots of other resources besides this book that give us, he's trying to implore us to use, as long as we understand it's spiritual and not religious. There are things that other tools we can use to broaden our spirituality, and that's what step 11 will be in the 12 and 12 podcast. And then obviously it says here more work is faith without works is dead, so we have to go to step 12. Well, we'll get into step 12 after that next podcast, and that'll be broken down into two or three podcasts as well, because step 12 again is a consummation of all 12 steps working together. And now we have to carry this message and help others, like I'm doing now, in order to give the message away, in order to keep it. So we'll go over that as well. So have a great weekend. It's the weekend here, and I hope you have a lovely night, and God bless you all. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.